Welcome to KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. In this hour, you're going to learn from the week's news with my guests, Washington State Republican Senator Pam Roach from Auburn. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Writer and activist Jossie Ross. Welcome to you, Jossie.
Thank you very much.
And Crosscut's Mossback columnist Knute Berger in Seahawk gear. Hey, Knute.
Hey, Bill.
Good to see you. The front runner for the Republican presidential nomination called for, I'll let him say it.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. We have no choice. We have no choice.
We have no choice. Okay, so here in King County, a state representative from Snoqualmie wrote that Islam is incompatible with Western civilization. We've been trying to get a Washington State Republican to come on this show and tell us where the line should be between reacting to people's fear of terrorism and making a minority group fear for their safety. Washington State Republican Senator Pam Roach, did Donald Trump cross the line?
Well, first of all, the House member that you mentioned, Jay Rodney, is a Marine. He knows about jihad. He's been out places where we haven't been and understands that, in fact, we do have a problem in America that needs to be addressed. So,
well, his comment was that Islam is incompatible with Western civilization. That's not
the, well, you know what? What I don't like is we take these little statements and never have a person go ahead and explain what they're talking
about. We've invited him many times.
Well,
yes.
Sorry.
So I hope that happens.
But there are parts of everything that can't are not necessarily good.
That's fair.
You know, there's always a bad apple, if you will, in every barrel. Okay, so let's just go from that. So what Trump said, I think he had caveats to that as well. And I think he's brought up a good point that, in fact, in America today, this is how I would typify it, we have new threats that we haven't had for a very long time. Some of us remember growing up and doing the air raid sign and getting under your school desk and putting your arms over the back of your neck and hunching up in a pre-natal position. Just in case there was an air raid kind of thing.
Right.
So it's not foreign to this nation that we alert a population and that we have people on guard. And I think that's a good thing. I'd rather not have sleeping people. We did that, thank you. Pearl Harbor was one of those times. And we need to be alert. I think that's a good thing.
Okay. We need to be alert. And then, the calls for no Muslims entering the country or a ban on Syrian refugees. Oh, no. I just want to know where you are on your comfort level some people in your party.
My comfort level isn't very high when the current administration lets just anyone in without vetting. You go to any television show and you'll find out that, in fact, we're not doing a good job, i.e. what just happened in San Bernardino. These people were not vetted. The wife was not vetted. You know, what about the mail order brides? This woman had met the husband-to-be, but in often times that is not the case. What about the fact that Muslims do have a special religious exemption to certain laws? Is that right? Not if we're going to be treating everybody the same and fairly and equally.
What exemption are you thinking of?
It has to do with bringing people over to the United States.
And I think a waiver for fiancé.
Waivers. And you know, doggone it, what's fair is fair, and it is fair for the American people to be asking questions and that we should be getting answers from the Obama administration, and we're not. It's just, you know, everything's fine when it isn't fine.
Okay, I wanted a state Republican on the record about Donald Trump. Though, Jossie, you were telling me that Donald Trump is not the issue for you.
Yeah, I'm actually thankful for Donald Trump, and I'm thankful for the state senator that you mentioned, because these folks are reminders in this supposedly post-racial environment, in this post-racial climate, that, look, it's not just Donald Trump. It's not just this particular senator, that there's 36% of people who actually believe this nonsense, who actually believe in this xenophobic, racist way that Muslims should not be here. There wasn't Donald Trump cheering. It was a whole bunch of other people cheering. And presumably it was a whole bunch of other white people cheering. And I've seen that before. I've seen that sort of xenophobia. And I'm thankful for the senator for being here. But she didn't really answer the question, which is, he's not saying that we have to be on guard. He's saying that one particular group, a discrete group, should not be allowed into this country. And that's contrary to American policy, as long as they do go through this vetting process that as a matter of legal fact exists and is pretty thorough.
Well, I object to what you just said, and it's a good example of how things get contorted. You just said that Donald Trump, had said Muslims shouldn't be here. He's not saying Muslims should not be here. He's saying let's put a moratorium on people coming in, and that would be anybody coming in, I suppose. I have a lot of Muslim friends. I was just in Azerbaijan a couple months ago. I count them my friends. I rejoice in the fact that we are friends, but bottom line is, you can't take something and twist it like this and be fair. He did not say, quote unquote, what you said, Muslims should not be here. He did not say that. And we have a lot of Muslims that are here, should be here, have been here for a long time. Nobody has a problem with that, okay?
I have a problem with you.
Okay, listen,
there was an original comment from Donald Trump. He was, as you know, he's been asked about it constantly for a week. He amended it a bit. I do want to stay on the bigger question of where you think our threat level ought to be, where we have crossed some kind of line into restricting the rights of people, of obviously vast majority of law-abiding, productive, peaceful
people. No, you don't know that about them. That's the problem. He's talking about people coming in. He's not talking about people already here. And you need to get the facts straight and what you're presenting.
Okay.
To distort what he's saying is wrong. You don't know. And the government will tell you and the FBI will tell you. They can't vet these individuals. How can you talk about law-abiding citizens coming into this country when you don't know if they're law-abiding?
Because empirically, they are law-abiding once they get here. And number two, there is, in fact, hold on, I'll let you talk. There is a process that is in place. There's a protocol that's in place. And that protocol was vetted by the Department of State, by plenty of bureaucrats who are in your position and who know the job much better than you do.
Okay, can you
and how's that working for you, by the way? That's how we got the wife down in San Bernardino that did what happened. Didn't work too well, did it? Let's say it. Yeah, you're right, Senator Roach.
Are you talking about San Bernardino?
I'm talking about an example there. I grew up in Southern California. We call it San Berdu. You know, you can call it what you want. San Bernardino.
Okay. Knut, welcome to the Week in Review. Any comment?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think Trump's calling for barring all Muslims, you know, for any period of time is wrong. I think it's un-American. I think it's racist. I do think that that's not to say there isn't a problem with so-called homegrown terrorism. It's not just a Muslim problem. We know that from incidents that have occurred in Atlanta and other places. I think that there's almost a political consensus almost that he is wrong in this. Even many of his fellow Republicans believe so.
Here's an NBC, just since you're talking about consensus, then I want to let you finish. The NBC News Wall Street Journal poll just out, 57% of Americans oppose Trump's proposal to bar Muslims from entering the U.S. Republicans are evenly divided. CBS News poll, 35% of GOP primary voters say they'd like to see Trump get the nomination. That's more than double the support of his nearest competitors, Ted Cruz and Ben Carson.
Yeah. And anyway, I think the way he's talking about it, he tends to be demagogic, appealing to, you know, people with extreme views. This week we saw, a lot of the white supremacist groups coming out saying, they love what Trump is talking about. And this is more than dog whistling here. And,
thankful for that we're not dog whistling. People are coming out with what he thought is real. Go on.
Anyway, do security people need to do a better job of finding out which are the people who are likely to cause problems and that kind of thing across the board? Apparently so. But I don't think we want to see America become an entirely closed society. There's no way we're going to stop every shooting for every reason. But there are things we can do to mitigate that.
Senator Roach, is it fair to say that liberals tend to find the threat of gun violence so high that we should regulate law-abiding gun buyers, and conservatives find the threat of terrorism so high that we should limit our welcome to law-abiding Muslims? Does that sound about right?
Well, I think what's happening here is we're getting extreme comments. One on the preceding speaker was way out there in la-la land. I know I'm in the land of the left here at this station, and I expect to leave unharmed, however. Maybe we can
understand each other a little better at the end of the hour.
I understand you perfectly well. And the issue here is, do we look at common sense or not? And common sense tells us we have a problem in America. No one is making these absolute statements. I had a sixth grade teacher one time, John W. Gregory, who was fond of saying, absolutes are the spawn of mediocre minds. Let's do that again. Absolutes are the spawn of mediocre minds. And so when we start throwing out things like all these conservatives, they don't want any Muslims in this country, that is not what was said. That is not what anyone is purporting. And to say so only brings me back to the fact that I'm in la-la land to the left, where you can't even talk about reality. Reality is we have many national threats. Cyber war is a big national threat. We've got 6,000 Americans trying to prevent big cyber attack from happening. We also have problems with people sneaking through borders all the time. This one happens to be the issue of, do we have the ability to vet or not? And we don't. Our own head of FBI said that in a Senate hearing just 2 days ago.
Okay. And so the question of whether we can vet or not, and actually, Knut didn't seem that lalo. He said he's agreeing with you that we obviously vetting is not solving the problem. The question is what we should do about it.
Let's move on.
Right. Len, let's move on. Okay. On the Week in Review, we are going to talk about the Serial podcast focusing on Bo Bergdahl, which brings us the first statement we've heard yet from this sergeant who was held 5 years captive by the Taliban. That and more coming up. KUOW 94.9 Seattle News and Information, live tweeting, at KUOW. I'm Bill Radke with Senator Pam Roach and Crosscut's Knut Berger and writer and activist Jossie Ross, and we are learning from the news of the week. And this week, we finally heard Sergeant Bo Bergdahl say why he walked off his combat post in Afghanistan into the arms of the Taliban, where he was held for 5 years. Here's a quick recap of the Bo Bergdahl story, beginning with President Obama at the Rose Garden last year with Bergdahl's parents by his side.
This morning, I called Bob and Jannie Bergdahl and told them that after nearly 5 years in captivity, their son Bo is coming home.
Bergdahl's hometown of Haley, Idaho, which for 5 years had Bring Bo Home posters and yellow ribbons all over the place, they planned this big celebration for him. But then so suddenly, the whole story flipped. Within days, within hours of his rescue, in fact, people began saying that we shouldn't be celebrating him because Bo Bergdahl deliberately walked off his post into hostile territory. That's how he got captured. Some of his former platoon mates called him a deserter. Others were saying he was a traitor, even, who might have collaborated with the Taliban. Some people took offense that in the Rose Garden event, Bob Bergdahl, who had grown a long beard in his son's absence, had spoken some phrases in Arabic and Pashto. The celebration in Haley was canceled. Congressional leaders condemned the trade the president made to get Bergdahl back, the release of 5 Taliban detainees from Guantanamo Bay, saying the trade was not only ill-conceived, but illegal. The Army launched a big investigation into what exactly happened. Why did Bergdahl leave his post? Even now, other soldiers are so enraged by what Bergdahl did that for his own protection, he's going to have a security detail with him when he leaves his base in San Antonio. Finally, the Army charged Bergdahl with 2 crimes, one of which carries the possibility of a life sentence.
That is from the Public Radio podcast, the blockbuster hit podcast Serial, one of the most popular podcasts in America last year. They told the story in their first show, their first production. They told the story real time, week by week, of an accused murderer. And so fans of Serial wondered, what are they going to do for their next show? And they chose to tell the story of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl of Haley, Idaho. Episode 1 dropped this week, and it had Bergdahl for the first time being interviewed about why he left that base. And Bergdahl says he was a whistleblower.
And what I was seeing from my first unit all the way up into Afghanistan, all I was seeing was basically leadership failure to the point that the lives of the guys standing next to me were literally, from what I could see, in danger of something seriously going wrong and somebody being killed.
So leadership failure, lives at risk, and maybe one too many movies. You know, the movie The Bourne Identity? Bergdahl said that he wanted to be like Jason Bourne.
So I had this fantastic idea that I was going to prove to the world that, you know, I was the real thing. You know, I could be, you know, what I could be, what it is that every, you know, all those guys out there who go to the movies and watch those movies, they all want to be that. But I wanted to prove that I was that.
The central question of this podcast is going to be, how should we feel about this guy? Knut Berger, so far, how are you feeling about Bo Bergdahl?
Well, I kind of feel sorry for him. I mean, you know, he seems like somebody who had a kind of, I don't know, hyperinflated sense of self, maybe even a breakdown or something. He, you know, wandered off the base with some kind of personal mission in mind. He wound up being a prisoner for 5 years of the Taliban, which I'm sure didn't help his state of his mental health. I mean, it just seems to me like he's you know, a confused young guy, and there are a lot of confused young guys that go to war. I mean, you know, weird stuff happens like this. And so whether he deserve a parade, I don't know, but maybe some compassion.
Senator Roach, do you feel compassion for Bo Bergdahl?
None whatsoever. And I have to, again, counter to say that a lot of confused young guys go to war. That's really not the case. You have people that step up to protect America. This young guy might have thought that that's what he was doing. But I'll tell you what, when Obama welcomes Bob and Janie to the White House, we brought back your boy to Haley, Idaho. When we had several people out and dying, looking for him, this is beyond the pale. You know, I think none of us were there, but I do think we have to listen to those that were. And Bergdahl was there, and it's taken him months and months, if not years, to come up with some way to try to bring out the sympathy of usually the liberal left so that he can come back into society and be respected, which apparently is what he was looking for. Well, if he'd thought about what he was going to be doing, which I contend he didn't, he just decided to leave. But if he'd thought about it, he would know that his comrades would go out and try to find him. Did he think about what the consequence of that would be to the other soldiers, his buddies, the people that joined, not because they were confused, but because they wanted and believed in America and wanted to do something for America? And now, did President Obama welcome those parents and those bodies back? Did he stand and cry and shed a tear for the people that went out and tried to find this guy?
That's a good question.
So.
I don't know whether what President Obama has said about the people who went out looking for him.
Well,
really,
probably not
answer.
Much. And okay. I think that we need to be understanding that this guy wasn't confused. He did something that cost other people their lives, and that is how the people on the ground view it. It's how I view it.
Okay. Jossie.
As a preliminary matter, for somebody who doesn't like absolutes, the senator likes to speak in absolutes quite a bit.
Let's give an example.
Hold on, please.
Give an example.
That it's all brave young men who go out into the military and not because of confusion, as Knut said.
I didn't say all.
So, but regarding this particular young man, I mean, honestly, I feel like there might be some mental health issues. You know, I mean, obviously the delusions of grandeur that, you know, he thinks he's Jason Bourne. It's a great movie. You know, it definitely, you know, lasted four episodes and definitely, you know, raked in a lot of money. And I can understand why somebody would espouse to be that. But the truth is that there's a chain of command. I remember my first summer doing legal work. All I did that whole summer was make copies. And I knew I had the solutions to all the legal problems in the world. And I thought all of my superiors, my supervising attorneys were crazy, not nearly as smart as me. But then I realized that there's a process. You get to know the process and you start to understand a little bit that maybe these guys know what they're talking about. He didn't give himself an opportunity to know the process and instead just jumped to the conclusion that he knew everything and acted upon that. And I think that for that, he should be held accountable.
So you're not defending him, but how do we hold Bo Bergdahl accountable? What seems like the right punishment?
Well, I think that, you know, any sanctions, I mean, you know, desertion is a pretty serious crime, if I'm not mistaken. And I mean, I think that he should be, you know, held accountable just like any deserter might be. that, you know, leaves in, you know, AWOL, right?
Well, he could get, as the podcast said, he could get a life sentence deciding whether to court-martial him. Okay, so before we leave Bo Bergdahl, Senator Roach, what's the proper punishment? Life?
Well, I'm not the one sitting in the room with all the facts in front of me, but I do think it should be, because later on the show we'll be talking about something that sets examples. I think that we should follow what the law is prescribed. And I will add this one thing, if you don't mind. So my son just got out of the Air Force. He's an attorney, JAG officer, and I do know that at any time, Bergdahl could have gone to any of the counsel that is always present. Counsel does go out on the site, not on the scene, to, if he had any grievances at all, to have stated those. So his storyline is just ridiculous. So, and I appreciate some of the thoughts that have been given on this. So I think
would it matter if you grew up, you said you're not there, you don't know the exact punishment, and that's fair. If you could you imagine you're from Haley, Idaho, and you knew little Bo Bergdahl, right? Your kids played with him, etc., right? This, as people in Haley, Idaho, they're very conflicted. How do you think you might feel toward this young man?
If I were living in that community, I'd probably be embarrassed, because everybody in a small community has a hand in the raising of people, whether they're school teachers or next door neighbors. And I think Idaho on its own is pretty conservative, and they wanted to welcome home a hero and found out he wasn't.
Knut Bridger, final thought before we move on?
Well, yeah.
The punishment?
Military justice system, I hope, will get to the bottom of it and decide what's appropriate. I don't know the ultimate truth either, but my sense is he's a casualty.
I have somewhere I have some tape of Bo Bergdahl. I guess we'll just listen to the podcast as it plays out, but he does get into what it feels like. Like, there's this question, has he been punished enough, right? He was held for 5 years, and he describes what that experience was like for him. And well, we'll keep listening to the Bo Bergdahl story as we keep learning more from him and getting into this question of what could he possibly have been thinking. This is KUOW 94.9 Seattle News and Information. In the news this week, the man whose job it is to root out waste and fraud in Washington state government returned to that job, even though he's been indicted for money laundering and tax evasion, and lots of people want him to leave. The governor, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the editorial boards at the Seattle Times and the Olympian. We're talking about State Auditor Troy Kelly, one of your colleagues, Senator Roach in Olympia, I suppose. Should he resign when he hasn't been convicted of anything?
Well, he's not a colleague of mine. He's a statewide elected official,
right?
A Democrat. He has a problem, and as part of this, I can't comment on if he is impeached. If that effort goes forward, it's the Senate that does the trial, and I would be one of those 49 individuals. So I'll kind of recuse myself from making too many comments on this subject.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. Knut Bridger and Giassi Ross, could you even have said what the state auditor does before? I would have been very, very vague myself on what the state auditor is.
Yeah, well, I mean, the state auditor is a watchdog and should be, and has some authority from the legislature to conduct audits, performance audits, financial audits of different state programs and state agencies. It's actually a very important job, and you want somebody in that job who is honest. And
he's not convicted.
That's right.
No, he's not convicted, and I think he should resign. I think I felt that all along. I think the charges against him, and I think his behavior even in office has been kind of highly suspect, in terms of the associate that he hired on a consulting basis, whether he in fact has been showing up to work. He took 7 months off to defend himself in this case.
He put himself on an unpaid leave.
Yeah,
and that seems to be part of the reason that some lawmakers want him impeached. And he's saying, "Well, you want to impeach me because I left? Here, I'm back."
So, I think it should be difficult to remove an elected official from office. But if they go ahead with an impeachment, I think we're going to, you know, learn a lot more. I think he was exercising terrible judgment, and I think he should resign.
You know, there's a difference between moral obligation and legal obligation, right? And I mean, for him, if you haven't noticed, I'm a big believer in processes. You know, from Bergdahl to Donald Trump and, you know, incoming immigrants to this. I mean, we should let the process play out. I don't think any of us are particularly familiar with the facts of this case. We know the allegations. And certainly if he's convicted, it should be a no-brainer. But I think that if he chooses to, as a matter of legal right, wait until that remedy is exhausted, then I understand that. I don't think he's under any moral imperative to get out of office immediately. I do understand the innate contradiction that the watchdog is the one accused of the wrongdoing, and I get that. There's a great irony there, but I still have to see some proof of wrongdoing.
I know Senator Roach is not going to talk about it. That's fair. I get the feeling that one of the things that's on trial here is the real estate industry, because he had this private real estate business, and he's accused of basically absconding with, I'm not using legal language here, but
I did read that. I can comment to this extent what I read in the paper about what he is supposed to have done.
It has to do with reconveyance fees. Yeah. We all pay these hidden, if you've bought a property, you're paying all kinds of fees and you don't know what it is. And so we've already been getting into this question of, well, did he promise he was going to give them their money back if it didn't really turn out to be as expensive a process as it could have been? And it seems very squishy, that question.
And it's fact-dependent. It's very fact-dependent. You know, and that's the thing, is that we have to see how the facts bear out.
Yes, Senator Roach.
Well, I want to bring a little matter of history up. It was the former Senate Republican Majority Leader, Jim West, if you'll remember, about 15, 20 years ago, was impeached. He was recalled, by the people in Spokane. He was mayor at that time for some of the things he did. So there is a process in Washington State, and I'm really glad we have that process. It is difficult. Whoever spoke earlier, it is difficult to actually achieve this kind of a thing. But I'm really glad we have the process.
Coming up on KUOW's Week in Review, what to do if somebody around you suddenly starts shooting. Some advice in a moment. Stay tuned. Knute Berger, Senator Pam Roach, Jossie Ross, and Bill Radke welcoming you to KUOW's Week in Review. This week, the King County Sheriff gave you some advice. With all the shootings we've been having, it's time for you to know what to do if somebody near you starts firing. This is it.
You have three options. The first is run. If you can get out of that building, do it. Go out a back door, go out the front door if you can, break out a window, climb out a window, do whatever you can, run. But if that's not feasible, then what you need to do is hide. Go into an office somewhere, lock that office, barricade the door, hunker down, and stay there. Keep quiet until the police come and you know it's the police on the other side of that door. But if you can't run and you can't hide, you're going to have to fight. You're going to have to take out that shooter, because otherwise you're probably going to get killed anyway. Get a fire extinguisher, get a chair, get something heavy. Go after him and try to take him out before he takes you out. And, you know, again, this is something we've never told the public before, but we need to be honest now.
Why now? We'll talk more about that. That's the sheriff of King County, Sheriff Urquhart, telling you run if you can, then hide, then fight. Jossie, how does that compare to the plan you've always had in mind?
Well, you think about first of all, I like the way he uses the pronoun he. He always uses he. It's only crazy people are he. And I think Santa Bernardino showed that that's not true. But, you know, you think of the quantum leap that we've come within this nation within the past 15 years from 9/11 on of a pragmatic discussion of where people are and the dissatisfaction people have for whatever reason, not to put judgment on the reason. And I think about my own pragmatic approach. I have an 8-year-old son. And my father of an 8-year-old son, there's conversations I don't want to have. I don't want to have a conversation at 8 years old about safe sex or about sexual advances or about if what to do if somebody were to try to abscond with you, to use your word earlier, to try to steal you. I don't want to have those conversations. But as a reflection of our environment and the realities that are very really going on in real time, I think that, you know, the sheriff gives absolutely pragmatic advice. I don't know about the effectiveness of it. I don't know if it actually works in that order.
You were telling me you might not use that order.
I probably wouldn't use that order. I'm a 6'5 brown guy that is pretty big, and I would probably be a first target. I've been jumped before. I know how it feels like to be the primary target.
Wait, I would think a big guy is the last target.
No, it's not true.
Doesn't work that way?
No, you get jumped first. You get whatever deadly force is going to be applied. It's the same thing. You know, I've been involved with several protests. I was part of WTO. I've been a part of protests since I was a kid and direct action stuff, and I'm the first one the police go for, whether I'm directly involved or not. I've been on the wrong side of pepper spray many times while I was pleasantly in the back.
So you saying you would fight before you'd run hide?
No, I think I would have to. I think I would have to. First of all, I'm not that fast. But number two, I think that I would be a target, and I don't think I'm not going to sneak away. I'm too big to sneak away, so I would probably try to find something, not as a macho matter, but to try to diffuse the situation as much as possible, you know, to try to disarm the person, whoever's in that position.
You want to tell me whether you carry a gun?
I do not carry a gun. I'm a Washington State licensed gun holder, and I am getting rid of my handguns because, as a matter of empirical fact, handguns are the primary killers. And when people who are injured, it's not submachine guns or a semi-automatic machine guns. It's handguns, and I'm getting rid of them because I have an 8-year-old son, and there's other children who come to my house.
Senator Roach, do you want to tell me whether you carry?
Oh, I don't think it's anybody's business.
Okay.
But I do believe that we're touching on something that needs to be talked about. You know, when the sheriff said what he said, run or hide or fight, he's really saying this. The police are not going to be there on time. 4 minutes isn't enough. And that's what San Bernardino, that's what it was, I think, 4 minutes. It's not fast enough. In other words, and then when it comes to running, well, you know, you can't outrun a bullet. It's not going to happen. Hide? Yeah, well, you can shoot through tables. That's not a big obstacle. It is not an obstacle. So we get to this issue of fight. Now, you're going to fight with something or not have something. If you know, don't you think there should be an equalizer in the room? I think had there been an opportunity to fight back in San Bernardino, maybe as many people, maybe somebody would have been killed, but maybe not as many.
You're saying you want more people carrying
guns. I'm saying that if we would look at how are we going to protect human life in a situation where police cannot be everywhere, that those people who can legally carry should be encouraged to do so. And I think that's, in fact, what the sheriff, and you'll have to have him on a show,
is telling us. King County Sheriff John Urquhart, thanks for joining us on KUOW.
And coincidentally, here I am.
Here you are. Are you telling King County citizens that if you are trained in the use of a gun, bring it or not?
I'm not saying that at all, and okay. I've never said that, and I'm not going to start saying that today. I think everybody has to make their own decision about whether they're going to arm themselves or not and whether they're going to carry that gun or not. And I don't think any government official should just make a blanket statement that citizens should arm themselves.
No, but you know a lot more than I do, and you have some understanding of what the threat level seems like to you. So I'm just wondering, you're not telling anybody what to do, but if someone is trained, has gone through the courses and that kind of thing, and you know is a responsible citizen, do you want more responsible citizens on your side? If, as Senator Roach said, 4 minutes isn't enough.
What I'm telling people is it's a personal decision. They need to make their own decision about whether they want to assume that responsibility of being armed in public. And if they do decide to be armed in public, they darn well better know what they're doing, get trained, shoot on a very, very regular basis. Don't just go out and get a CCW because of what you see on TV. That's what I'm saying.
Concealed carry, CCW. Concealed carry.
Carrying a concealed weapon. Right.
Carrying concealed weapon permit. Okay. We know that there have been shootings recently, but this is America. We've had gun violence for years. How scared today are you telling the average King County citizen we should be?
I think you should not be scared, but you should be cognizant of what is going on in the world and what could happen here.
Okay. Any questions for King County Sheriff Knute Berger? Anything to add?
I have one, too.
Okay. Yes. Knut?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I,
Senator Roach?
You may or may not know the answer to this, Sheriff, and good to chat with you, and thank you for joining us. And that is the number of individuals that are seeking concealed weapons permits in just King County. You might know the answer to that. I know that several years ago when something like this happened, we had a rush, and there were mostly women. Can you comment on that?
You know, I don't know the gender of who is applying for a concealed weapons permit. I know that the applications have gone way, way up, both, I think, all across the state, probably all across the country. But, yeah, there's a lot more people. We've doubled. In the last couple of weeks, we have doubled in the number of people that are coming in for a concealed weapons permit.
So, Sheriff, I have another question for you, and this is a sensitive one, and you are a directly elected person in King County, which is fairly liberal, so, and I happen to like you, so maybe I shouldn't ask it.
But, no, go ahead.
But, you know,
I like you, too.
Well, thanks. So, you know, we have sitting ducks. I personally favor a no sitting duck policy. Schools, children in those schools are sitting ducks. What is your way of protecting children? And would you think that, say, a wrestling coach who is a former Marine who carries concealed, do you think there should be people on campus to protect children? Just curious.
I think there should be people on campus to protect children, and my preference is that they would be police officers.
Can you, in your mind, think of a way of commissioning people for certain periods of time, say when they are working in an environment where you have a lot of innocent people?
I think that would be very, very I can envision a scenario like that. I think it would be difficult to do, and I think the legislature would have to weigh in and see. Obviously, they've got to change state law.
I think they should weigh in.
Giassi has a question, too.
Sheriff, I just wanted to thank you for your very pragmatic advice. And I know those are difficult conversations and, you know, not necessarily the advice you want to give in an ideal world. And also to thank you for emphasizing the necessity of training, because regarding the question of what I would do, and, you know, if I were in that situation, if I could become Jason Bourne and pull out my gun and do this, I'm a hunter. And I understand that hunting, even when a deer that can't shoot back and isn't going to assail me in any way, your heartbeat goes up. There's certain physiological responses that make it more difficult to do that in that sort of duress. And I think that putting people with guns, thinking that they're going to save the day somehow in these difficult situations is fallacy. It's a lie, and I thank you for emphasizing the importance of training.
Can I just add one little personal comment here, Jesse?
Yes.
I'm also a big guy. I used to be 6'4". I'm probably a little bit less than that as I've gotten older. I used to stay in the back, too, and I've been pepper sprayed because I was big and I was in the back.
Yeah.
During a demonstration. So when you were telling that story, I had to laugh because I've been in exactly that same situation.
It happens, yeah.
It does happen.
Is your advice different for big guys?
No, my advice isn't any different than big guys. There are people that are going to want to run. There are people that are going to want to stay and fight. There is no one-size-fits-all. That's what we have to understand in this situation. Some people are going to want to run regardless of whether they're male or female, short or tall, strong or weak. Some people are going to want to stay and fight. And when government officials, myself included, tries to give you one thing that you should do, that's not going to work.
Be suspicious.
What I'm trying to give is a range of things, of possibilities, that's entirely different than what we've said for 50 years, which is cooperate, give them the money, do what they tell you to do, but things have changed.
Comment, Knut Berger?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the advice obviously is lays out the options. None of us know. Well, some people might know if they've had military training or whatever, but most of us don't know how we would respond in that kind of a situation. You know, it would depend on the specifics, but also depend on, I think a lot of people, you know, carrying a gun makes them feel safer, whether they in fact would ever be able to shoot somebody else is another question. Usually the perpetrators are much more willing to shoot you than shoot back. I mean, obviously there are ways of defending yourself that don't require a gun as the sheriff was outlining. You know, the thing I'd like to see crazy people and sinister people have less access to firepower. I'd like to live in a society where kids can, like they used to, go to school without fearing these kinds of attacks. And that's a much bigger kind of issue to resolve.
My final question, Sheriff John Urquhart, you just described how this is different advice from what you would have given 50 years ago when the first advice was to cooperate, give them the money. So given how more dangerous our world is, in your assessment, in terms of gun violence, are there any restrictions or more regulations on gun ownership that you are calling for?
The only more restriction that I'm calling on, I really don't know what the answer is to not only to violence in America, but gun violence in America specifically. All I know is we've got to figure out a way to keep guns out of the hands of criminals or would-be criminals. And clearly we don't do a very good job of that. And that includes the mentally ill. Mm-hmm. We don't do a good job of that. We need to figure out how to do that without usurping the rights that the Second Amendment give us.
That's the hard part. Do you have one recommendation?
More opportunities to keep guns away from the mentally ill. An opportunity for the police, for example, or families to go to a court, talk to a judge, and get an order taking their guns away. That's what I think the most easy step that we could do, the first steps that we should do now.
Sheriff John Urquhart joining us on KUOW, talking about his advice, new advice, not what we used to be told, but this week he's been discussing the importance of run, hide, fight being your options if somebody starts shooting. And he was talking about one recommendation for reducing gun violence. Sheriff Urquhart, good to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
KUOW's Week in Review. Forget paying by the gallon. How about paying for the mile? Would you go along with that? And some good advice for life in general. Some tough love advice coming up. Stay tuned. KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke with Knute Berger and Jossi Ross. And State Senator Pam Roach, did you drive from Auburn here today?
I drove, so I'm excited about commenting on your next topic.
Very good. Okay, so this week a state commission recommended we try out a new way to pay for roads. Instead of paying a gas tax, which charges you by the gallon, you'd pay for every mile you drive. So if you work in an expensive city and the house you can afford is far away and you already hate your long commute, you'll enjoy paying for every mile you wish you didn't have to drive. Senator Roach, what do you think of this idea?
I think it's a terrible idea because it discriminates against people who live out in the country, people who live out in the hinterlands a little bit. Think of yourself as being a farmer in eastern Washington. Let's just say that. How fair is that? When you consider to do your work, you're going to have to put all those miles on the truck. But if you're downtown Seattle, maybe you don't even have to have a car. You get to have your transportation subsidized by everybody in the state so you can ride a cheap value on a bus. So clearly this is just another way, after we've just passed a huge gas tax increase, that'll be like 11¾ cents after a couple of years. That's a huge gas tax increase. The largest tax increase in Washington state history, I might mind you. It's barely been signed into law, and now they want to come at us another way to bring in more money. They can't live without the thought of grabbing more money. Leave us alone.
What are you going to do about the lack of money coming in because the gas tax is bringing in less and less, and as we get more efficient cars, then we'll move into electric cars?
Well, first of all, we're doing an awful lot now for user pay, which I think is the way that most people now agree it should be done. If you're going to use that bridge, then you pay for the use of the bridge.
But isn't pay by mile a user pay? You're going to tear up the roads for as many miles as you're going to drive.
No, I'm saying I do not like the proposal.
Yeah.
I don't like it at all.
Yeah.
I'm saying that we have come to a situation where we are finding money, and the largest tax increase in Washington state history, as I just said, just signed into law. So this proposal, particularly coming on, it's not a new one, it's been around, coming on the heels of that huge tax increase only tells me that the unelected bureaucrats coming up with these ideas have no, they all probably live in downtown Seattle, love the people in Seattle, but you don't have to drive too much, do you now?
Can I put the senator from Auburn down as a no vote then?
Yeah, the country cousins always kind of get messed up in these.
We're live tweeting our show at KUOW. We're on Facebook, KUOW Public Radio. I'd like to hear what you think. Knute, pay by mile, fair or unfair?
Well, it depends on how it's implemented. I mean, I think there are a lot of benefits to it. Obviously, if cars become cleaner and we're using less gas and that kind of thing, it's a good thing to find another way to fund the roads and fund transit possibly. And the problem is whether the other taxes would go away or whether they would stay. In other words, do we end up in a situation, and I hear what the senator is saying, do we end up in a situation where you're paying per mile, you're paying a gas tax, and you're paying tolls? I think incentivizing people to use their cars less where that's possible is a good idea. But I think, on the other hand, I think there has to be some kind of freedom of movement that doesn't punish poor people or rural people. And the other concern I would have is how they – do they actually track where you go, or is it strictly, fee based on the odometer, essentially?
Well, the odometer doesn't tell you which state you've been in. So one Washington state proposal is a GPS tracking device.
Right. And I think that has some problematic aspects, just as tolling does in the same way, where and we know what hackers can do. You were alluding to that earlier about people who can attack, our information system. Do you really want the state to know everywhere you've been at every time, et cetera? So I think there's some civil liberties questions, too.
Mm. So should I put Senator Berger down as a no?
No, I think it's something. I think it's an interesting idea. It needs to be worked out. I see the advantages of it, but I think there are a lot of questions to answer.
Senator Ross?
I'd appreciate the honorable.
You wear it well.
The honorable. Thank you. It makes sense to me. There's an old game theory problem called Tragedy of the Commons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and where at some point, if there's no incentive for people to limit their use, then they start to overuse. And to me, use taxes are the most intuitive thing in the world. As we grow in population and, we're quickly multiplying in population, and as a result, we got multiplying cars and use, et cetera, et cetera. I think that when you're applying a broad bureaucratic stroke, because ultimately they are broad strokes, they're not going to be precise, that's going to account for every single person, then you err on the side, to me, of an egalitarianism of usage. That we assume that if you're using it, that you can afford to use it. It's a luxury tax, right? You don't buy a Mercedes-Benz and then complain about the gas mileage. So if you're going to live in Auburn, that means that presumably that you're going to be able to, and you're not accessing public transportation, because that's always an option, right? If you're if you're in a low budget area, generally those places are more urban places. It's not deep in the country. And so, there is going to be some level of use tax, and I'm comfortable with that. I'm completely comfortable with that.
Okay. For our senators are turning in a yes vote, a no vote, and a maybe vote. As Speaker, the Constitution requires me to go to the listener at KUOW on Twitter and on Facebook, KUOW Public Radio, and we'll settle this. Coming up on the Week in Review, the best advice is the advice you don't want to hear.
Mm.
The Mossback from Crosscut.com is Knute Berger, State Senator Pam Roach of Auburn, writer, activist Jassy Ross, and we are learning from the news of the week. We're going to leave you with some powerful advice we heard this week. I thought so anyway. The co-owner of the Seattle Storm WNBA basketball team, Jenny Gilder, also is a former Olympic champion rower. And I was asking her about the firing of the Husky women's rowing coach, who some student rowers said was verbally harsh, disparaged their weight and performance, pressured them to skip classes. Now, Jenny Gilder did not defend everything that this coach has done, but she did say that not only are today's young athletes soft, but that parents in general are not teaching their kids the important lessons of life.
Most people don't care about you. Life is tough. And you're going to screw up more than you're going to succeed.
Yeah, basically life is hard.
Sometimes you're just not going to like how it goes. It doesn't matter if you're an athlete or not. You have to kind of shut up and suck it up. I must sound like I'm so mean, but that's really part of life.
What do you think, Senator Roach? Good advice? Should more kids shut up and suck it up? or fewer.
Well, I'll tell you, real life is tough. You're talking to someone that's been beat up more than most. And
what do you mean by beat up?
Oh, they come after me all the time. I've had a Senate minority leader scream at me, then turn around, bend down, and put his rear end in my face as I was seated in a chair.
Life Haven't you tough. Also been accused of being verbally abusive?
You know what? All I'm saying to you is that somebody has to start these things.
Yes.
What I'm telling you is life isn't easy. She's definitely right. So on a more positive note, my daughter-in-law, Melanie Roach, who was an Olympian in 2008, a weightlifter.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I went to Beijing, watched her participate.
Wow.
She's the first woman in the United States to clean and jerk twice her body weight and set five records at the U.S. Nationals last weekend, a week ago today. So I've watched somebody train. I've watched somebody who has the ups and downs. And there are very few places in life where you can get a true experience of failure and success. And that would be in sports, particularly if it's an individual sport, where it's up to you, the guts you've got, can you fight back? Melanie had back surgery, had a broken wrist. Things like this, can you come back? And it's a wonderful place. And what I think is, yeah, young people shouldn't be sheltered quite as much.
Okay. We've got, look at the clock, 40 seconds. So, Jesse Ross, quick take on how we're raising our kids. Are they so? You said you have an 8-year-old.
Yeah, I think that sometimes we prepare them for failure by not giving them the instruction that at some points there will be an objective standard, and there's a question of whether they make it or not, and we have to prepare them pragmatically.
Knute Berger.
I think I can say with kids and grandkids in my own childhood, there's been a progressive loss of independence for children and over-monitoring by parents. Also, I have a Scandinavian Scottish heritage, so kind of a bleak view of human nature and whatnot. I come by that kind of Puritanism, honestly.
Well, keep it tuned right here to KUOW Seattle. And remember, if you don't like what you hear,
you have to kind of shut up and suck it up.
Producer Amin Al-Sadi and board operator Jack Walters, they understand that. Jason Pagano, he's starting to get it. Bon Huberman is our social media producer. We're on Twitter at KUOW. Jossie Ross, Senator Pam Roach, Knute Berger, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Appreciate it.